You got rejected by YC, right? And now...
Well, multiple times.
Multiple times, actually. How often?
Yeah. Well, first time 2013 actually was, I believe, the one where we got the closest to being part of YC. We launched a product called conferencebadge.com like a month prior to YC interviews. So we just, you know, fill up the form, said we made, we're already make some money. And then like a second later, like PG was replying to my email, or at least to my form, and say, oh, that looks really amazing. Like, okay, we're going to fly you here. But the interview was terrible. I mean, we were just launching like a small app to make name badges, not a $1 billion company. So, and our English was extremely broken at that time. And so the interview
I saw
really
your
good.
Video. Yeah, you posted like the video on Twitter, I think, right?
That's 3 years later. That was for Missive, I think. Yeah. So yeah, we're not really, you know, it's the English that's sometimes broken, but at that point it's not bad. You know, we can convey our ideas and people understand us, but it's not being salesmen. We're really geeks. You know, we don't network a lot. We like to work, do emails, work, improve the product. So something like the YC interview is really out of our comfort zone. I guess it's the same for a lot of YC funders that in the end made it through. So
I was about to say, I always thought this is what they kind of appreciate, right? They want the nerdy types.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe we're like ambitious enough in the way we present ourselves.
Yeah.
So
didn't talk about changing the world.
But what's funny is the last time, so we did flew three times to make the interview, one time with Conference Badge, two times with Missive. And the last time, I think the guy that interviewed us was the guy from Peeble, you know, the Peeble watch. And, you know, a guy's pretty much my age, I think, or even younger. And he was absolutely bored. We were the last people being interviewed that day. And it was like the dude didn't want to be there anymore. And the questions were really out of scope, made absolutely no sense for us. And so we're like, okay, like we won't make it. And we did not. But what's funny is like 2 years later, he became a Missive customer. It's like, okay, he became a Missive customer for a year, I believe. So that was kind of funny.
Yeah, I mean, there are so many variables. It's like with this, I mean, that's a fake story, right? But with the judges, that you get a stricter sentencing when your hearing is right before lunchtime, right? Mm-hmm. When the judges are really kind of hangry. I think that has been debunked, but it's a cool story. And I can totally see like the same thing happening with YC. Obviously, there is some randomness, right?
And the thing about YC is, for us as being outsider, not knowing anything about, you know, funding or, you know, venture capital backed businesses, it was kind of our only possible entry door to that world. So that we're not the kind of people that'll try to do those things by ourselves. But we knew that that would be a good school, a good training ground to at least be up to the speed and not, you know, lose our time. And as soon as those doors at YC closed, it was clear for us, like, there won't be any funding. It's going to be all bootstrap. And we were focused from day one to be ramen profitable. Now I have 4 kids, but at the beginning of the journey, I had none. So it was kind of easy for us to be ramen profitable. And that's, you know, it's like, I don't know, we could have lived with few thousand dollars a year. So that's pretty much the key. It's like we can live like that for many years now. So we're all good. We don't need to raise any money. We just need to find customers and make them happy. And that's what we did for the last 7 years now.
Wow, yeah. I mean, it's one of the big secrets, right? Not having kids too early to you need to take care of. I don't have any kids right now, but I can only imagine this is going to make things so much harder, right? When you're taking these kind of...
Another way, change yourself. You lose less time. You know, the things that are not important, that are irrelevant, you really need to find them and discard them, because you don't have time to do any all the things you want to do, right? Like the kids, it's non-negotiable. Like you want to spend time with them, and for the rest of the time you still have available for your businesses, you just focus on where the value is. And it's pretty much what we've done. Well, right now it's me. Etienne also have two kids. Raphael has no kid, and he's the CTO, so he's the one monitoring everything. I guess he can't have kids.
that's very handy. Yeah. No, I mean, I think I also saw you talk about like the whole mental health thing, and that these strong boundaries are so important, right? Like I think you said something about family dinner is non-negotiable for you, right?
Yeah, and things like the reality of a family is really hard. So it's not just easy. It's not easy to have kids. Like it's not easy to have a business, right? Even family dinner, have four kids. There's always a fight. So it's never easy. But like everything in life, family, business, everything that's hard, in the end, it's what you remember and it's what you cherish the most. And those family time, but their ups and downs for me are non-negotiable, because you only live once. And it's a bit the same philosophy in business. Yeah, to me, it was clear quite early in my life that I didn't want a boss. I want to be independent. I want to work in technology. It was like, I prefer to be dead poor trying to make it than not trying to make it. It's the same with kids. Like I prefer to have four kids, no sleep. I wanted a big family. So those things were not negotiable for me. So I just found a way, right? If it's important for you, you find a way.
Yeah.
And as for, you know, mental health, it's like, yeah, having a business is stressful. Having kids is stressful. And for us, I thought I was a really strong person for all my life mentally. But then COVID hits. One of my children had some health issue. And Missive start to be really making money. And for really weird reason, it's like, my one goal in life was like to get a SaaS to 100K a month. And when I hit that target, it's like, I had no goal anymore. It's like, what's the point, right? Because you start to make a bit more money, but I don't like to spend money. So in the end, it doesn't change anything in my life, right? The goal is reached, but it doesn't change anything. And you realize, okay, what's the point? And for me, there was a few months where I had to refocus myself on why I do that. What are the goals? And you realize you're a lot ego-driven. You know, at first you have monetary objective because it just makes sense. You want to be independent in the long term. But when you reach those goals, it's like, okay, why I do that? Why keep doing that, you know? And for me, it was a hard period of just, okay, refocusing and understanding why I do all of those things every single day.
Yeah, no, I get that. And I mean, for me, my monetary needs are extremely low, right? And like, I think like, as for you in the beginning, right? It's not hard for me to be run profitable, to make enough money. But at the same time, I don't want to do nothing, right? I don't want to just play video games, which I could, right? I could live, but it was just, I mean, I don't know, working an hour or so every day. That's definitely possible. So yeah, for me, it's like the I found the driving force is really just learning new stuff. And I find like when I'm stagnating, very very frustrating when I'm not learning new stuff, right? Also, when we in our business, when we hit a plateau, that's the worst for me. Like, because it's just the same thing over and over again. And I want to test new things. And you only really learn, get exposed to completely new problems when you get to a different level, right? And it's not the same thing with a breaking again, right? And this is kind of my motivator. And I don't really care about the money, because honestly, beyond my, like the basic needs, easy, right? But even then, like the luxury needs, I don't have a car because I need one, right? I live in the city center, I can walk anywhere, and we can go to the restaurant whenever I need. So what more do I need, right? I don't know where to spend the money.
Exactly. Yeah. And as for plateau, or because the thing is, like, people don't realize is having a business like Missive, you know, things are repetitive. It's like, it's not a one day success story. It's like you make hundreds of thousands of small decisions, and those add up, and at some point you have some success, right? But like sometimes it feels like every day is a bit the same. It's not as exciting as you would believe it could be, which I think, like, if you raise money, that's a total different story. I get you're in a rocket ship and you don't control anything and you just try to make things work, and you hire people, you fire people, you raise money, you have that crazy vision. And, you know, when you bootstrap, you just put one stone after a stone after a stone after a stone, because you don't have the means to do more than that. And that can get boring at some point. So you need to find ways to make your journey still exciting.
Yeah, but I mean, and that's one of the big things, that building a business is not like in the movie, right? It's not like in The Social Network where it's one thrilling event and decision after another. And also, like, there is no big master plan or this one tiny change you make that currently makes everything easy. Like, that's all nonsense that is like pushed by like these business fiction writers or movie producers, whatever, but it's not real.
And to be honest, also, it's the Twitter culture, it's the podcast. Yeah. It's like you try to distill your vision and why do you have success? You make those tweets, but in the end, it's so hard to convey. And we're all guilty of, you know, trying to create snippets of content.
Exactly. Totally. Like, we are absolutely wired for stories and pattern matching. And I do this all the time, even though I know it's nonsense, right? You look at some stuff and then you create some narrative around it. But actually, no. Actually, like, what got us from here to there were thousands of tiny things. It was not one big thing, right? Even if in retrospective, it sometimes can seem like, no, that's not it, right?
And it's funny because on Twitter, you know, tweets that I made were the most popular was always like, hey, we do that MRR now or something like that, right? And every, like, Twitter is only, well, X, whatever, is only pushing that content to me.
Yeah.
It's like every day I see like people reaching MRR goals. I'm like, are people, when they read my tweets, like those, like me when I read the other tweets, right? It's like, to me, it's like, I don't care what goal you reach, right? I don't know why those tweets are so popular. So that's why I make it, because in reality, when I do those tweets, you know, it creates a lot of leads because there's hundreds of thousands of people that see them. So I will do them. But in reality, I'm not sure it's good for everyone reading those. It's useless, but it's good for the business.
Yeah, you got to do what you got to do.
Exactly. And I'm not such a good marketer. So the one things that work, I'm kind of trying to redo them.
Yeah. So you're at 3 million.
More than that. Yeah, more than that. Like, it's growing good now. So last month we did like 6% grow. It had been a real while since we did such good monthly growth. You know, if we grow 6% every month, like, it's growing really fast.
Yeah, I think that's all us, to be honest. Like,
sorry?
It's all us. It's all our agency. Like, we're spending a shit ton of money on Massive. And we are expanding. Like, the thing is that we are managing inboxes for other companies. And so whenever we grow, like, our Massive bill grows a lot.
Yeah. And I'm always curious with people with your use case of Massive, because I believe you have hundreds of emails accounts in, or even thousands.
Yeah.
Like, is it still fast? Because I've never tried Massive with that many email accounts.
I think we are definitely pushing the limits of what's possible with Massive, like, in any direction. We are doing crazy automations, and I'm definitely annoying to your support about it. But no, it's still usable, I would say. We have just one issue, is that it's not really possible to remove emails from the system. So because, like, it's not the email accounts, right? They don't do anything. The problem is, like, the emails. And if you actually try search for something, this is kind of slow for us, because we have like a ton of messages that need to be searched through, and this is sometimes working, sometimes not. So, and we can't remove, like, the message we don't need from the system. So that's the, I think the only bottleneck.
You'd like to remove those automatically, right?
Yeah, and like using the API, really just, I know the conversation ID, right? I just want to delete them. And currently that's not possible. And if we could do this, I can run the script, right? No problem. I can clean up our missive in like a few seconds, and we are, I think, back to top speed.
And we're doing live back here. So you'd like the API endpoint to allow you to delete conversations that are useless, all their messages. And I guess that should be synced to the email server. So delete them everywhere.
Oh, no, we actually don't care about that. So because the only thing we would care about is removing them from missive to make missive fast.
Right.
The rest we don't really care about. And because I get that can cause some issues, right? But it's just like the speed thing. But again, I mean, it's okay. We're using it, obviously. And
that's the point. It's like all those other unified inbox still have limits that are far lower than missive. So the reason it's probably because as a business, you don't want your customer experience to degrade at some point. So we're pretty lax in those limits. Like, I'm not sure that you could import, I don't know how many emails account you have, but
a few hundred. Yeah. I actually don't know.
That's a lot, actually. That's a lot. Cause I always feel free to reach the support, but like repeatedly, like it's always
I can be very persistent. So no worries.
But the good news is that the conversation endpoint to actually patch and destroy is already built. It's just like waiting to be reviewed and released. So at some point it's going to be possible.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm very curious, like the different use cases you have on missive. Is it like, I think we are really the exception, right? I'm pretty sure. Like, and is it mostly really just businesses for, I think that's the intended use case, really just a business that wants like a unified inbox and then have like a sales channel and a support channel, right? I guess that is like the big chunk.
Yeah, so we have a couple of big use cases. We have email delegation. So let's say a CEO will delegate to their assistant. That's kind of a big use case. It's not bringing that much revenue because it's just two people really in an organization. But usually the most well-known missive users are going to be having that use case. And I won't name names, but there's a lot of unicorn CEO using missive.
Andrew Wilkinson, huh? You probably have.
Yeah, he switched to missive. Yeah. He switched a few weeks ago. And actually his tweets were good because it brought a lot of leads. And I would say, yeah, so there's email delegation. There's obviously customer support, which is, you know, it's a massive one because usually businesses will use a lot of seats for that. And then there's the third one, which are missive power users. Like they have agency making websites and they're going to use missive for everything. They're going to ditch Slack. They're going to ditch everything. Just do their chat, internal chat plus customer relationship in missive. So it's hard for us. Now, when I talk to experienced marketers, they always tell me, okay, what's your ideal customers? Like, you need to define it to me. It's like, whoa, God, I don't know. I mean, they're all around. There's not one special breed of customer we want to focus on. But in the end, it's still working, even if it's a general solution. And I think if we look in a few years, the market for us is going to be massive because we haven't like focused on a special niche, right?
Yeah.
And we're still a really flexible platform. But obviously, we're not the best platform for an agency that do cold email, like you would say.
Yeah.
Which that's the type of business you're doing. Because that's probably a niche need, right? We could probably build the perfect product for you. We would probably charge you like 10 times the amount because we'd say like, look at the value you're getting from this.
We're already paying enough, I think.
Yeah. Okay. But your use case, actually, the thing is it's taxing on our infrastructure because usually organization with few seats will have, I don't know, 10 email accounts. You guys have a lot. That's why at some point we started to charge for extra shared accounts because we had, you know, two guys paying $36 a month, having like 200 emails account. And if you look at solution like Nihilus, I'm not sure they call Nihilus, but you know, it's like, it's just an API to send emails, and they charge $2 per email account per month, right? So for us, it was like, okay, so we're spending a lot of server resources for a use case that's really niche. We're just going to start charging per email account. And if it still makes sense for them, good. But if it doesn't, like at some point, they're going to find another solution.
Yeah. I mean, the economics needs to make sense for you. And to your point, we are using Missive not for cold email, right? We use a dedicated software for that part.
Yeah. So it's to reply to emails.
It's only
right?
Exactly. Like the replies actually coming in. And that volume is actually not that crazy. And
I'm so curious about your business, because you know, I talked to a couple of Missive customers that are kind of well-known startup, and they probably won't say it aloud publicly, but they all do those types of cold email campaign, and they're all saying it's working really great. And so the strategy for you, I guess, is to have multiple email accounts, so your authority or your ability to deliver those emails.
Yeah, it's about not hitting spam folders, but also like not going to the promotion folder, right? You want to hit the primary inbox in G, for example, Outlook, same story. And there are certain limits on what, obviously, like if you use one account and you send 1,000 emails, the same email, like you're going to hit the spam folder. This is how it works. But if you have some variation in the text you're sending out, like there are variations, you can do different hard-coded variations, you can do use something like spin text, but then also use different accounts. Obviously, like the sending volume per account is actually very low, and there is, if you do this right, there is actually like you hit the primary inbox every single time. And
for those email accounts, like let's say Missive becomes a customer, do we need to use multiple related domain names like Nubase with aliases?
You want to protect your primary domain, right? You should never use your primary domain for cold email, because obviously you're doing everything you can to protect your reputation, but you don't want to run experiments with your primary domain. So what we do is we buy like missiveteam.com or meetmissive.com, right? These kind of domains, and then you set up accounts on these domains to run these campaigns. Yeah.
And are these dedicated Google Workspace accounts, or are you just using aliases? Or
yeah, it's all individual email accounts, like fully separated.
Right. So it must get really expensive if you want to do that at scale, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It's not cheap, and like we have four
customers.
Big costs, right? We have the email accounts. And we have the cold email sending tool, we have Missive, and we have payroll, right? These are our four big buckets where the money is going.
And at what point do you pass the ball to the real company? Like, oh, here's like a qualified lead, you should take care of it.
We have different types of customers, actually. We have some where we do everything. We actually close for them. We have some where we just forward every single positive reply, right? We have our own scripts to classify emails, and then when we apply a label in Missive, this person is possibly interested, and then it triggers a rule to forward the message to them, like, because speed is very important in like time kills every deal. But like the most common scenario for us is actually that we have very specific criteria for what we hand over, and we have some cool automations for that. So the criteria is typically someone is ready for a meeting, right? And we do everything to this point, right? We answer questions, we send information, we nurture the conversation, and when someone is ready to meet with our clients, we apply a label in Missive. And this sends them a message, mm-hmm. which is a handoff email. It shows like, who is this person? What was the conversation so far? Like we enrich it with information, like what company, and they can click a button and join the conversation. So this is how it works for us.
And I'm jacking the podcast here. I'm curious, because I've never done those things. What's your types of customers? It's like, is it mostly startup like Missive, or?
Yeah.
Because
yeah,
I know
so
like
we,
a lot
we
of our-
So we have three buckets. We have SaaS companies. We have agencies, other agencies, and we have media companies. And for media companies, we typically, like, it's newsletters trying to fill the ad slots, right? For example. And there we do typically everything, the closing, because it's very easy. Like, it's very straightforward, mm-hmm. like what is actually being sold, and people understand it. And the rest is pretty much 50-50 right now. We have SaaS companies and fellow agencies helping them get new clients.
Right. That's good. I remember having a conversation with a customer that was doing this in-house at their startup. And he was like, dude, you don't do that. You're crazy stupid. I was like, okay, well, I don't know.
Seems
like you need a lot of skills to do that without. If you make mistakes, that can be really problematic, I guess. Well, obviously, you don't use your prime domain name, but.
I mean, you had an interesting tweet. I think someone asked, like, what something every CEO should know about marketing, and you said, like, it's overrated.
Yeah, well, yeah, I don't know. I feel like I'm not such a good CEO. It's like in a way, Missive is where it is because that we're like we are. But I'm pretty sure if I was giving the keys to someone else, it could 10x the business quite fast. So maybe I'm too harsh on myself, but yeah, let's see for the future. But you need to morph yourself into somebody that's different with a different skill set. But the thing is, like, we're so flooded with feature requests, like you, right? You might say, like, it's the guys at Missive, they're just ignoring my requests. It's like, man, we received like at least 100 emails a day, and it's just like people wanting new things, new stuff, and it's hard to not be drowned by those requests because you always want to please everybody. It's just not possible nowadays, so it's easy to say no because it's physically impossible, but it's hard to move yourself out of to have the time to experiment in other things. At least it's hard for us because there's so much that needs to be done every day at the basis level. And we're probably at a point where, okay, we probably need to hire people to help do things. But hopefully that's going to help. But for all my friends that start hiring people at their company, it's just they become managers. The quality drops significantly in all the different roles that they hire for. And there's a lot of churn, employee churn. And it brings a whole lot of different level of issues. Though I think it's good for us to at least not have right now, because we're as crazy as it might sound, I still believe we're not product market fit. We haven't hit it. Okay, you say you grow fast. You say yes, but when I have conversation with customers, there's a lot of small things that are still issues that we know we can fix. And when those issues are gone, I mean, I don't know. I know those set of issues. We want to fix them. And I know that when we do fix those, it's going to be a whole different conversation because that might sound crazy, but the set of small issues that I know that are still there it's not that big anymore. It took 7 years to get there. There's like the road now, the end is quite close to have like the real vision we had for the product. And we still won't have the ends fully on the wheel until we reach that point. And which might be the reason why I might not be the best CEO for the future. But anyway, I'm digressing now. Sorry.
That's very interesting. And I mean, for me, I was also definitely kind of against the whole hiring, whatever, because I didn't want to do the managing thing. But then again, I discovered this is actually like a new game, right? I'm actually like, this allows me to play a completely different game. And yeah. Now I love it.
Make it fun again, maybe.
Yeah, it actually, like, I love the daily grind of actually being involved in every detail every day. And I didn't want to get out of it because, like, yeah, no one cares as much as I do, right?
Yeah.
But then, yeah, it definitely made things very interesting. And it's still very interesting where I'm learning a lot. Like, how do you hire the right people? How do you keep the right people? How do you keep them motivated?
Yeah. Yeah,
I mean,
exactly.
There is so much stuff you can try and do. And yeah, I never saw myself in a position like this, but now I found, like, that's actually fun. And at the same time, I'm doing all the technical stuff for us. So this is kind of where I'm still involved in everything. I'm really the only technical person on our team, and we are writing, like, we're using a ton of internal tools and like the crazy.
Well, that's going to be an odd part to remove yourself from that position, because, like, you know, you have all the small knowledge bits that are here just to create documentation or just to
document processes. Absolutely.
That's probably why it's still the one piece you have an ire for.
Yes, and, absolutely.
And even for customer support, Missive being a really complex product, like one email out of five that reach customer support at Missive requires like deep investigation. The question is like, why is this email in my inbox? Well, there's like a billion possibilities, right?
Yeah.
It's collaborative. There's mention. You can watch. You can have rules. You can have, and people are pissed if they don't know why. So you kind of need to look at the logs, look at their settings, and it's hard to fathom how someone that haven't built that platform be able to do that in a speedy manner, right? They're just going to lose their time. So for us, like, we know we have to build tools before we hire for those support requests, because our employees would have to look at the tools we've created to answer those questions. Without those tools, they'll just lose time, and we don't want to give access to like all the logs and everything to like Lambda employees doing customer support also. So there's a lot of tools we need to build. And anyway, I'm digressing, but yeah, obviously, like, a business is never done, and each phase of growth bring new challenges, like you said earlier. And in our case, that's probably where, okay, we probably reached the limit of what we can do, just the four of us. And I'm still surprised we can still be just the four of us and have reached that level of customers. And, you know, people is like, you must work like crazy hours. No, actually not. It's not that bad, right? So I'm really surprised we could get to that level. And being a small team has defined, it's like our DNA. It's like part of our culture, right? Like, if you ask people what Missive team is known for, it's like, those guys are like foreign. They have like thousands of customers. They do an email client. How do they do that? So it's part of our DNA. So to let that go feels like it's going to be a hard thing for us, but it's obviously going to be necessary at some point.
Yeah, that is why you never reply to my email. So now I know.
I don't reply to your emails.
No, you always do. I'm just joking. Like,
I would say it's because you hit my spam folders. I do not check my spam folders. I get so many emails that I'm like, I don't even check spam anymore.
You know, my email reputation, like, top notch. We monitor that stuff. So I'm not hitting the spam folder. No chance. So we are running out of time. I have this nice forcing function called not a premium plan on Zoom. So I'm limited like to 40 minutes, but I think that's a good thing.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed it. Like, expect to hear from me.
expect to have better support going onwards, because when you meet someone in real life, it's harder to decline their request. So it was a good strategy for you. I guess that's the plan.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Thanks, man.
Bye-bye.
Cheers.